Thank you very much for the invitation. So today I would like to kind of conduct a survey of a series of the recent few papers with Ruben Prasek, and one of them is joined with Vasily Pest and another with Ivan Karpov. So, and it has a lot of intersection, as far as I understand, with the recent work of Castella Gayota Yagi, but kind of we don't do it more mathematically without any T-hoop lines. So let me start. So I'll do it historically kind of backwards so that even if I run out of time, at least I convey the most recent progress. So what are the main results? So the plan is first to describe something very classical. So it will be mostly classical, but there will be one new thing actually coming up. And those are BGG type resolutions for finite dimensional G modules. So there are no quantum groups, no Youngian, just finite dimensional G algebra and resolutions for it. And the second part will be about how this can be applied to actually obtain some formulas for transformatrices of finite dimensional representations of rational spin chains in terms of infinite dimensions. And then there will be a separate discussion of how those infinite dimensional transformatrices split into the product of two Baxter Q operators. So this is something we can do formula wise. Probably we don't have a good understanding why that works. So that's kind of the miracle and at the moment. And afterwards, in the last part, I'll try to explain how those kind of Q operators are related to degenerate Lax matrices and how those degenerate Lax matrices arise through shifted Youngian. So it will be the discussion of that relation and also about RTT approach to shifted extended Youngian. So let me start from part one. So as I said, part one is it will be classical. So G is simply algebra with root system delta with a bunch of simple roots alpha I. So let lambda be the weight lattice, lambda plus be the integral dominant weights, W is the Y group, L is the length function, and there is this particular element row, which is the sum of fundamental weights. So this is kind of the standard setup. And now we have the action of the Y group on the weight lattice, but we take what's called dot action, so it is shifted by row. And the final piece of the puzzle is the standard construction of irreducible representations and of Verma modules. So Verma modules are the highest weight representations, kind of the biggest ones with the given highest weight, and L mu is the irreducible quotients. And we will be interested in the case when mu is in lambda plus, so mu is dominant, and L mu is finite dimensional, but M mu are infinite dimensional. So this is very old, and so the result, which is half century old, is the BGG resolution. So it is after Bernstein, Gelfand, which says that if lambda is dominant, so if L lambda is irreducible finite dimensional G representation, then it does admit a finite length resolution by Verma modules. And those Verma modules are parameterized by elements in the wild group. And what you see is that they're kind of group together according to the length of the element in the wild group. So the first element is M lambda, the last one is MW naught lambda, where W naught is the longest element in the wild group. So their construction was a mixture of combinatorical and algebraic argument. And some aspects of it were improved later on, but there were two important combinatorical properties of the Brueghel order, which is kind of established in their paper, and no one improved it anymore. But what's important is that actually this result was generalized to more general setup. So Rocha, Caridi, and Wallach generalized this to symmetrizable Katz-Moody algebras. But later on in the 90s, Kumar proposed a geometric approach to actually establish this for any Katz-Moody. And I will mention the geometric approach in a moment. So basically, like BGG constructed this for simple algebras, but this actually works for any Katz-Moody. But the only difference that for general cut smooth, it's no longer a finite length resolution. Okay, and what we will do, what we will need for the rest for other parts, specifically for part two, is a certain truncation of this, where I'll keep L lambda, but I will be changing the modules. There will be no longer Verma modules. And the story starts as follows. So we fix certain subset S, and for such subset, we have two associated structures. We have a parabolic subgroup and a parabolic, the corresponding parabolic subalgebra. So, and every parabolic subgroup which contains specific Borel, it's coming that way. And given the parabolic subgroup, it speaks as a semidirect product of unipotent part and Lévy part. So I can consider the Weyl group of Lévy component and root system of the Lévy component. So I'll denote them WS and delta S. And so WS is a subgroup in W. And in particular, for the main result on this page, we will need a specific parameterization of the left cosets. So W mod WS on the right. And those representatives are going to be chosen to be the shortest representative in each corresponding coset. Okay. And finally, we will need specific modules. So they're no longer Verma modules, but they're highest weight modules. So they're defined as follows. We take Verma module whose highest weight is W dot lambda. So again, it's dot act. It is not just W acting on lambda, but it is shifted by rho. This dot action. So I take this Verma module and then we kill out several submodules generated by specific highest weight vectors. And the way they're defined is that, so their highest weight are as specified on the page. So I take reflection. So I take reflection of W dot lambda with respect to the root W of alpha. So please note that this W alpha is no longer, it's not necessarily simple root. So I just take all possible such reflections. And so the resolution that will be needed later for the Young-Yan discussion, but now it's kind of stated simply in that classical setup, is that if G is any simple algebra, lambda is a dominant integral weight, then we do have resolution of finite dimensional module L lambda by a bunch of those modules that we just introduced. This is step one. And step two, that each of such modules in turn has a resolution by usual Verma modules. So just to compare to the previous page. So in PGG, we had overall W Verma modules structured into resolution according to the length. And over here, you see two resolutions. So I kind of take a bigger gadget and I slice it kind of in horizontal direction to get the first resolution and in vertical direction to get the second resolution.
Right. Can I ask you a question? So this MS, lambdas, are they modules over anything or?
Sorry?
This guy's MS lambda, are they just vector spaces or are they modules over something?
No, they're G modules.
So I'm blanking. So defining them as the quotient of the Verma module by singular vectors.
By everything generated by singular vectors.
Everything generated by singular vectors. Because what's written is just singular vectors. Okay. So
the claim is that for every alpha, those vectors are going to be those are the singular vectors.
And is there any relationship between them and the parabolic Verma modules?
That's coming on the next page. Okay. So this is the result. And now to answer Sasha's questions, let's compare this to something more classical. So it's very similar to the well-known BGGL resolution, which is Bernstein-Gelfand-Lepofsky. And it looks very similar. So basically, the only difference is that in that construction, the quotient is on the other side. So we take now right cosets. If I don't mess up who's left, who's right. So I take W on the left quotient by WS. And I take shortest representative Z. Okay. And for such data, now we define in a similar way again, the modules. They are gonna be highest weight modules. And now they're, again, generated by submodules, generated by specific singular vectors as written on that web page, on that page. But now it is just reflection in alpha. And it's actually a parabolic Verma module, which means that they actually arise as taking some finite dimensional representation of Levy of parabolic, extending it to a representation of parabolic by letting unipotent part act trivially, and then inducing. But it can be also algebraically written that way. So it's Verma over the entire G, quotient by everything generated by specific critical singular vectors. And then the theorem of Lipovsky from 1977 says that the same two resolutions as we saw on the previous page, they hold in that context as well. So you may wonder what's the difference. So probably let me point out that the main difference, which is kind of important for us, is that in Lipovsky construction, those modules, they're all parabolic coming from the same parabolic subgroup, but their characters are gonna be really different. So some of them can be, if I take this resolution, one of them can be induction from one dimensional representation, another can be from a much higher dimensional representation. So they have different characters. While in the previous truncated BGG resolution, all the modules that we're featuring, they have the same character. And for our application, all those modules will be just symmetric algebras in several variables. So long story short, that there is BGG standard resolution, there is this parabolic version, and now there is this extra truncated version. Okay. So probably a few words about geometric approach, how all of those theorems can be proved kind of in the same, by the same technique. So I don't have time to do it kind of carefully, so I'll just kind of outline the main ideas behind, and it all rests on the notion of cousin complexes. So let me recall it. So let X be a topological space. So if I have topological space, we can and a sheaf on the topological space and a closed subset, we can consider cohomology supported on that subset. But we will need a relative version. So now we pick two closed subsets, one inside another, and an abelian sheaf on X. And then following Grothendieck, and then developed further by George Kempf, there is this notion of relative cohomology. So it is constructed in two-step procedure, which I'll skip. But what's important, so in the previous setup, they're just vector spaces. And you do want to get some resolutions of G modules. So in order to get G module structure, we actually want to have group acting on X. X will be smooth algebraic variety. And we also want the sheaf that we have to be also D-module. So in that setup, though all those cohomology relative cohomology groups become not just vector spaces, but G-modules. And all natural long sequences that kind of come naturally from between those cohomology groups, they're actually G-module morphisms. Okay, and now kind of to spell the main geometric thing, let me introduce so-called cousin complexes. So the setup is now X again. It depends whether we want to treat them as vector spaces or G modules. So as vector spaces, X can be any topological space, but for G modules, we will always take smooth algebraic variety with action of the group. So the setup is that we have this X and we have filtration by closed subsets. And now there is a natural way to construct complexes, which are, as you see, the increased cohomology degrees, and the relative support is Z0 mod Z1, Z1 mod Z2, Z2 mod Z3, and so on. And why do we care about them is because of the following theorem by George Kempf. So we have, so he stated it in slightly different words. So that presentation follows Murray Rice, but I believe it's basically equivalent. So if all those complexes, except for a single one, vanish term-wise, then the cohomology of the remaining one actually recover cohomology of X with compact support zero. So what does it mean? It means basically that you have a sheaf on topological space, you have some stratification, and we'll do it in a very nice example. And basically knowing cohomology on each strata and having nice properties for them, you can recover cohomology on the entire stack. So what are the applications for our setup? So in our case, we will take X to be G mod B, so it is flag variety. And I mean, this is result interpretation of Brzezinski from 1981. So X is G mod B. We take the shift just to be the line bundle associated to, in the classical way, to lambda. And we take stratification by closed subsets just by taking all B minus orbits of given of dimension not bigger than such. Okay. So G0 will be everything, of course, dimension not bigger. So G0 is everything. G1 consists of all Schubert cells of codimension one or bigger, and so on. So we have stratification of flag variety by Schubert cells. So each of them is a fine piece, but they agree somehow. And we are each GI is just union of all those cells whose codimension is not bigger than I. And the claim is that that way recovers, so applying the theorem of Kempf, the cousin complex recovers the BGG resolution. So one piece to keep in mind that since G0 is entire X, so the cohomology on the entire flag variety will be just L lambda by Barai Weilbot theorem. But important new ingredient that all those relative cohomology are actually equal to the dual of Verma modules. So that's kind of geometric interpretation of BGG resolution. So a decade later, Murray Rice provided a similar interpretation of parabolic BGG. So it's the same X, the same sheaf, namely line bundle, but a different stratification, different filtration by closed subsets. So now we look at not B minus orbits, but at P minus orbits. So each of them is a union of B minus orbits. And they prove using both geometric and algebraic arguments that it does coincide with Lepofsky parabolic version. And finally, what we do is that we show that to get our truncated BGG, you need to slightly modify. So we take now X not to be, to be not the full flag variety, but partial flag variety. We take the sheaf, which is push forward of L lambda, all higher derivatives of push forward will vanish. And stratification is by B minus R. And then that way recovers those resolutions. And it's interesting historical comment that in Kumar's proof of general BGG resolution, he actually writes in the end of his paper, as he pointed to us, that if one applies this construction to G mod B, then one recovers Lepofsky, but it's actually not true. So if we apply to G mod P, we actually recover this new truncated resolution. Okay, so this kind of concludes part one. So this was purely about resolutions of finite dimensional irreducible representations over finite dimensional simple Lie algebra. Any questions? Okay, so now, why do we care about it in the Young-Young context? So the story will be about transfer matrices of rational spin chains. So let me start by recalling type A setup. So here we'll kind of start, we'll follow Fadeev school's approach. So we'll start from R matrix satisfying Young-Baxter equation, and kind of quantum group is coming from R matrix in RTT approach. And then in the end of the talk, we'll do it opposite way. So right now we start from the simplest R matrix, rational R matrix. So it is type A R matrix. So it is identity operator plus permutation divided by Z. And it does satisfy Young-Baxter equation. And given that data, one defines RTT Young-Young of GLA. So it is associative algebra. It is, first of all, associative algebra generated by infinitely many generators encoded in N by N matrix. So you have N by N matrix with entries a series in Z with coefficients being generators. So it is a big gadget, but all relations are conveniently encoded in this RTT equal TTR relation. Okay, so it is actually a Hopf algebra, and important feature in type A is that it does admit an evolution homomorphism. So we have a map from Yan-Yan of Jalen to universal enveloping of Jalen. And what that means that I can pull back any representation of Jalen back to representation of the Yan. Okay. And now, on the other hand, if I have representation of the Yan-Yan, so all generators of the Yan-Yan are just encoded into n by n matrix, and I can look at the image of it. So that way I'll get some n by n matrix with values in some algebra, endomorphisms of V, series in Z with coefficients being endomorphisms of V. And it is Lux matrix in the sense that it does satisfy RTT equal TTR relation. And the transfer matrices, classically, they are defined as traces of the corresponding monodromy matrix. So what's going on is that I'm taking several copies of the Lux matrix. I tend the product of a finite dimensional representation, but taking intrinsic algebra product in the endomorphisms of V. And then we take trace over V. So in general, this V will be most often infinite dimensional. And to make this trace well-defined, we need certain kind of graded version. So this twist is else than the graded version where incorporate how Cartana acts. Okay. And so the result from 2012 of Bazanov and his collaborators that we have a certain relation between transfer matrices of infinite dimensional representations and transfer matrices of finite dimensional in terms of infinite dimensional. And if you look at this formula, it's basically nothing else than BGG resolution. So it's basically saying that trace behaves well with respect to long exact sequences.
Is it important that you're dealing with GLN here?
Sorry?
How important is it that you're dealing with GLN
here? Exactly, so that was my next sentence. So it is important because we start from BGG resolution, which is G module resolution, and I can make all modules into Yan-Yan modules because of evaluation homomorphism.
Oh, okay.
Yes, so that's kind of the main point why it doesn't work in general. So now BCD types. So for today's talk, I'm only concerned with classical types. So all results are expected to work for other types, but we don't have techniques for that yet because everything's kind of done computation-wise, unfortunately. So let's do other classical types. So G will be either symplectic Lie algebra or orthogonal Lie algebra. So which means that we have rank R, but the corresponding matrices are either 2R by 2R or 2R plus 1 by 2R plus 1. So this will be denoted by the size is denoted by K. And there is important involution on the index set from 1 to K, which is kind of taking the opposite. So I prime is K plus 1 minus I. And there is this constant that will come in a moment. So to define the corresponding R matrix, we need to introduce certain operator. So it is an operator given by this formula where plus minus signs actually all pluses in orthogonal cases, and there is a simple procedure to specify in symplectic case. So given the data, and actually before inverse scattering method appeared, the Malachikov brothers came up with a very nice solution of Young-Baxter equation. So it is R of Z given by this simple formula. So identity operator plus permutation divided by Z and minus this Q divided by Z plus kappa with kappa as above. Okay. In their paper, they have it slightly in a different way, but one can show that they're kind of gauge conjugate. Okay, and given this R matrix, one can again introduce the algebra just by RTT relation. So, and that will be called extended RTT Yan-Yan. And why do we add part extended? It's because it has a huge center. So if I mod out the center, then I will actually get the honest RTT Yan-Yan of G, but the center is a polynomial algebra in infinitely many generators. Okay, so this is kind of the setup. This is a replacement for Yan-Yan of GLN. Now, what are the obstacles for the previous approach to work. So first of all, there is no evaluation homomorphism. And in particular, not every finite dimensional representation of G leads to a representation of the Younger. But even those that do lift, for them, the Verma modules that appear in BGG do not need to lift. So this is kind of the main obstacle. And for that reason, kind of to get hands around that, we'll specifically look at very small subset of lambda. So we will pick lambda, which is minuscule quadrate. So I'll take lambda to be omega I, such that omega check I, which is kind of weight for the Langlands dual, is minuscule. And it's actually, so in classical types, that's coming from the paper of Kirillov and Refitikin, probably like 30 years ago, where they showed that for those weights, every multiple of that weight as a representation of G, like it gives rise to irreducible representation of G, which lifts to the Younger. But it is also proved in this already mentioned paper of Castello, Gaiota, Yagi last spring that for under those conditions, it's always the case, not necessarily in classical types, in all types, that such co-weights actually give rise to the action of the Youngian on parabolic Verma modules. And one can show that therefore that this is equivalent to that statement that I pronounced a minute ago, that namely that all multiples of that co-weight, the corresponding finite dimensional representations, also lift to the Young. So we have this kind of very strong restriction, and there are very few of such co-weights, and the treatment will be case by case. So I'll try to do it more accurately in one setup and then just repeat word by word for the other few cases. So we will, for such weights, we will be now replacing BGG resolution with those truncated BGG resolution. So just to answer Sasha's question 2 minutes ago, so idea is the same. You take finite dimensional representation, which now has an action, not just of G, but of Youngian of G, but we replace resolution by another resolution which action, where each module has an action of Young. And then everything works. So that's kind of the idea behind, but it's technical, so I'll probably spend the next 4 pages just providing some details. So let's do it in pedestrian way. So we'll do it in type C first. So there is only one node where the previous for which omega I is minuscule. So, and representations will be coming the following way. So first of all, we'll consider a higher rank Heisenberg algebra. In other words, oscillator algebra. So we'll have a bunch of AA bar. And as you can see, there are R times R plus one over two of those. And all of them pairwise commute except for those two in the same pair. So their commutator is one. So we encode those generators into two R by R matrices. So they're symmetric with respect to anti-diagonal. Okay. And now having those blocks, we construct now two R by two R matrix, which is given here. So statement number one is that it is actually Lux matrix. So what that means is that it does satisfy RTT equal TTR relation with this the Molochikov R matrix. And furthermore, it is linear in X. And if you check where X stays, it stays everywhere on diagonal. So it is X times identity plus some matrix, which is X independent. And it is cubic in oscillators. So now what that means that if I have some representation of the oscillator algebra, it immediately gives me rise to the action of the extended Youngian on that representation. And the simplest representation of oscillator algebra is the Fock model. So I'll take a module generated by one vector, Fock vacuum, which is killed by half of the oscillators, by those A, freely generated by A bar. And so it does become a module over extended Youngian, and therefore, in particular, it becomes a module over just E algebra, SP2R sitting inside the Youngian, which is just the first generated by the TIJ1, by the first components. And as a G module, it's easy to describe. It is a dual of parabolic Verma module, which in our case also coincides with the dual of those other modules that we considered. So for the element that for the trivial coset, those two modules are the same. So what that means is that on the dual to that to the parabolic Verma module, to the module that one of the modules that we were interested in, the action of the Lie algebra naturally now extends to the action of the Lie. So this is kind of one outcome. And now we will just see what the resolution that we had provides in the present step. So first of all, what is the quotient of the Weyl group by the subgroup of coming from the Lie? So Weyl group for type C is semi-direct product of SR semi-direct with Z mod 2 to the R's power. Now, Weyl group of Lie is nothing else than type A Weyl group, which is just SR. So the quotient is parameterized by Z mod 2 to the R's power. And I will represent it by sequences of plus minus 1. And therefore, for each of those, we had the shortest representative. So we have bijection between plus minus 1R and those shortest representatives of the cosets. And I'll denote them W mu. And so now there is a way to actually not have only one Lux matrix, but create many more. And actually, I'll need as many matrices as there are terms in the resolution. And the procedure is quite simple. So you take this Lux matrix, there is a way to conjugate it by something which preserves RTT relation, which is a matrix X independent. And then you want to do this. So similarity is coming from is just conjugation. Particle whole means that for some pairs A and A bar, I will do involution, which maps A to A bar and A bar to minus A. So this is needed in order for me, in order to have Fock vacuum still being a highest weight module. So long story short, there is a simple procedure, very kind of naive linear algebra procedure to cook out as many Lux matrices as we have shortest representatives. And each of them will be given us an action of SP2R and actually of the extended Youngian on the same Fock module. Okay, so we'll have the same vector space, but different actions of the same algebra. Okay, and again, for general T, namely when T is not half integer, those modules are dual to the modules appearing in this truncated BGG resolution. So how do you see it? They have the same characters, and using Katz-Kazdan formula, you can show that those modules are already irreducible. So they're highest weight, they have the same character, one of them is irreducible, hence they're the same. Okay? But at those specific values of T, they're gonna be different because those modules are not necessarily, they're dual, are not generated by one vector at those specific values of T. Okay. So now that we have the setup, so if we have this Lux matrix, we want to derive some equalities of transfer matrices. So we'll do it very pedestrian. So again, the transfer matrix is what? It is automorphism of tensor product of several copies of finite dimensional representation, C to the 2R. So I'm taking tensor product of several matrices, but with the intrinsic algebra product inside oscillators. And then I'll be taking trace over Fock module. So we kind of trace out infinite dimensional representation, keeping in mind this twist, which kind of guarantees that that makes sense. So it is kind of graded trace of the monodromy. Okay. So, and if we replay it, if at specific values when T is integer, positive, non-negative integer, we replace trace over entire Fock by trace over finite dimensional P, that will give finite dimensional transfer matrix. And so now what we had in part one immediately provides us very similar formula to that result of Bajanov and collaborator. So the finite dimensional piece is an alternated sum of infinite dimensional pieces. So that's kind of one take home from today's talk, that you just need to modify a big resolution by a smaller one, and then everything works. And all those computations with transfer matrices are very kind of straightforward because everything is just given by polynomial oscillators and the trace is over Fock module. So everything's kind of quite pretty simple to define. And in particular, one output that it gives is that transform matrix of fundamental representation is defined at discrete set. It is defined only at non-negative integers. But the right-hand side does make sense for any complex number. So it does allow to analytically extend it. And one can show there is certain symmetry in parameter t. And we have actually certain zeros in parameter t. Okay, any questions on that? So this kind of model example in type C, and the next few pages will be just saying that the same works for types B and D similarly. So any questions on that? Okay, if no, so in type D, there are actually three fundamental ways for which the resolutions become resolutions over the Yang-Yang. And on that page, we'll do spanorial case. So now there will be R times R minus one over two oscillators. The matrices A and A over line are now skew symmetric. So they encode all those generators and they're skew symmetric. The matrix L is defined precisely by the same formula as before in terms of A and A bar. And we repeat the same curve. So the Fock module becomes the module over the extended Yang-Yang and as a module over finite dimensional Lie algebra sitting inside is just dual to parabolic Verman. And it has a specific values, namely half non-negative integers. It has a finite dimensional sub-representation. Okay. And again, using similarity and particle hole. So again, we take this Lux matrix, we conjugate, we do particle hole in specifically assigned pairs of oscillators. To obtain another family of Lux matrices, given rise to highest weight modules, which a general parameter T would coincide with the modules in our truncated BGG resolution. So now that means that we can apply the truncated BGG resolution to establish certain equality between infinite dimensional transfer matrices coming from those Lux matrices and finite dimensional. So the only difference notation wise is that now I have this plus minus sign. So because in type D there are two spinorial nodes, so plus will be used for one of them, minus is for another. So one of them has weight 2t omega r, another has 2t omega r minus r. So those are fundamental co-weights at the fork nodes. And so now we obtain this very similar equality to the previous one, which was first conjectured last year by physicist Ferranda Frasek Kazakov, who checked it at the length zero spin change, which is just coming from the computation of characters. But now having a resolution actually established it for any length of the spin change. And again, it does give analytic continuation in the parameter T. And in particular, you see certain symmetry in parameter T, what happens when you change the sign. And again, we have conjectural zeros of those functions, of those endomorphisms as functions in T. Okay. And the last two examples that kind of where those minuscule co-weights do exist are the types BD and the first fundamental case. So there is not enough space on that page to actually write this formula down. So I'll just mention that it first was written in the paper of Frasek in type D, and then we also worked it out in type B. And what you need to know is that it is now quadratic in X. So it's now, if before all Lux matrices were linear in the spectral parameter X, now it is quadratic, but it involves much less oscillators. So it involves K minus two pairs of oscillators. And the statement is again that this Lux matrix will give rise to an action of the extended B type or D type Yang-Yang on the Fock module for those oscillators. And they're nothing else than the dual to parabolic Verman, which is the same as dual to the simplest of our truncated models. And now the indexing set for the quotient, so the while group, say in type B will be SR semi-direct product with Z mod 2 to the R, and the smaller while group will be SR minus 1 semi-direct product with Z mod 2 to the R minus 1. So the quotient is naturally parameterized by two R elements. And for each of them, again, we produce the corresponding Lux matrix by doing similarity, so conjugation by something, and particle hop. So we always repeat the same procedure for each module in our truncated VG resolution. We want to create the corresponding Lux matrix from which that module will become natural. And again, we immediately get the equality relating finite dimensional transfer matrix in terms of the infinite one. So T1, the left-hand side, is the transfer matrix of the finite dimensional representation, which as a module of a simple Lie algebra just has co-weight T times omega 1. And what appears in the right-hand side are those infinite dimensional representations. Okay. And again, we have certain symmetry in T and certain zeros, conjecturally zeros. Okay, so that was the end of part two. Any questions? Okay, so now let's move to part three. So this one is kind of slightly isolated, I would say. So we notice some equality, like we do it formula-wise, but we don't have mathematically or physically any good understanding why that happens. But the claim is that those infinite dimensional transfer matrices will factor into the product of commuting two commuting Q operators. And let me start from type A. So in type A, it was known for a decade before that the transfer matrices coming from Bermat modules, they actually split into a product of N operators. So, and one important thing to keep in mind that those modules are coming from representations of the Young, yeah? And in particular, they correspond to certain Lux matrices, which have X on the entire diagonal. Those Qi, they're also coming from taking trace of certain monodromy, of it coming from, again, certain Lux matrix, but that Lux matrix is now degenerate. So it has spectral parameter X only in one spot on the diagonal. And moreover, all entries besides for the corresponding row and column are 0 or 1. And moreover, what's kind of interesting feature is that those Lux matrices are certain non-degenerate normalized limits of the one entry in here. And using this factorization formula, so this symbol means that the equality holds up to certain series, which doesn't depend on X. So combining this formula with VGG formula from part two, one can express transfer matrix of finite dimensional representation in terms of those Q operators. So there are actually a whole bunch of those Q operators parameterized by, they're called Baxter Q operators, and there are at least 2 to the power n parameterized by all subsets. But they do satisfy QQ relation, so basically everything is determined by those Q1, Q2, and Qn. So QQ relation is here. Okay, so that was something known since the work of Bazanov and collaborators. So now, what do we do in other classical types? So again, I'll do it carefully in type C and less carefully in types B and D. So consider, recall that we had those two R by R matrices, which were encoding all oscillators A and A bar. And I'll relabel them A1 and A1 bar because we will also have A2 and A2 bar, which is just certain a total particle hole. So I'll replace A bar by minus A by A bar. And what do we care? Why do we care about that? Is because we have two Lux matrices, but the main difference from the previous construction is that they do have X only on part of diagonal. So this is 2R by 2R matrix, but it has X only in the upper left block on that. And this one has X only on the diagonal in the bottom right block. And as matrices in oscillator, they're quadratic, while the previous were cubic. But what's important is that they do come as normalized limits. So that equality here actually immediately guarantees that if this matrix satisfied RTT relation, that one also satisfies. And for that reason, we call them degenerate Lux matrices. So they satisfy the same relation, but their asymptotic in X is different from what was used before. And what's important that not only they're coming, so those two matrices are coming from L, but you can actually recover this non-degenerate Lux by fusing those two. And what that means is that this is just linear algebra computation, very simple. If you take two matrices, you multiply them, then you, after some nice conjugation, which is just formal conjugation by this exponent, you recover the original non-degenerate Lux matrix multiplied with certain matrix, which is triangular and has ones on that. So why do we care about that? We care about that because when we will be taking trace, this G will actually will not contribute at all. It is triangular with one on diagonal. And what we'll see in a moment that the transform matrix that was coming from L will split into transform matrices coming from those L plus plus and L minus minus. So let me just do it quickly. So we define Q operators again as certain, now it is certain normalized traces. Probably you don't want to know why we do that, but it's, again, we take certain monodromy and we take trace of monodromy with explicit twist specified here. So same procedure, but now those matrices have X not on the entire diagonal. And this fusion equality from the previous place, that implies, as I said, that transform matrix of that infinite dimensional module splits as a product of two. And again, that symbol just means that there is an X independent series here, just prefactor. And this can be generalized, so it's not only for one of those modules, but for each of those modules that was appearing inequality. And therefore, this combining this formula with BGG formula, we obtain this explicit formula. So now I spell out those factors. So they do depend on those kind of twist parameters, but there is no X parameter. And so it says that transform matrix of finite dimensional representation is the alternating sum of QQ. Of transform matrix is coming from degenerate Lux matrix. And those transform matrices Q plus and Q minus, they also pairwise commute. And basically the same work in other types. So in spinorial D type, we get this formula. And in first fundamental case for BD type, we introduce those two degenerate Lux matrices again as they're given explicitly, but they can be also realized as certain normalized limits. And we obtain the formula combining with BGG, we obtain this formula. So transform matrix for finite dimensional is alternating sum of double product of Qs. Any questions? Okay, so that kind of first part of the talk. And the second part, to whatever extent I will have time to explain, is to show how those Lux, so in the last few slides, we saw that there were Lux matrices coming up, which didn't have X on the entire diagonal. So the second goal is for today is to explain how they're related to shifted Youngian. So let's start by recalling first what the Youngian is. So Youngian is a Hopf algebra. It's quantization of universal enveloping, but it's also quantization of certain group scheme, G1E inverse. And I'll make a comment in a moment. So they do have three realizations, original J realization, which has finitely many generators, horrible relations, but nice Hopf algebra structure. It has new Drinfield realization, which has infinitely many relations, infinitely many generators, but well suitable for representation theory, but not a very nice Hopf algebra structure. And finally, we have RTT realization. Again, in type A, it is Fadeev's work, Fadeev school. And in types B, C, D, they also had certain results, but in full picture, it was stated in Drinfield's paper and proved quite recently by Curtis Wendland, how to do this in more general setup. But it all rests on knowing a specific R matrix. And very few of those R matrices are known. So the Zamolodchikov and the type A are the nicest examples. Like the others one are not known explicitly. But the procedure that if you know R matrix, you can introduce the algebra by RTT relation, and that will be extended Youngian. and key in the center will give you non-extended lambda. And probably it should be mentioned just to explain why I have two different objects, that every quantization of universe enveloping actually gives you quantization of some group scheme. And this is called Greenfield-Gavarini duality. So to explain it, one first need to introduce parameter h bar so that classical limit makes sense as h bar goes to zero. And then there is this canonical procedure how to hook out of quantization of any algebra, a quantization of something commutative. So you basically look at all elements such that all iterated coproducts for every n further composed with identity minus co-unit are divisible by n's power of h bar. So that gives you identification functor one way from quantization of universe enveloping, like here, to quantization of something commutative. And there is a procedure backwards, which is less trivial. So now, what the shifted Youngians are? So here I'll do it in the shifted setup, but if you place, if you set mu equals zero, you'll get this ordinary Youngian. So it is in the loop realization, as originally proposed. It has a bunch of generators. So you can think of them as kind of deforming Chevalier generators, EI, FI, HI, tensored with k's power of spectral parameter. So the only difference where mu comes up into game is a labeling set for Cartan elements. Okay. While FI and EI do not depend on mu. So we slightly change the indexing set and we keep all relations and some set relations. So it looks like a dumb procedure. So we take loop realization of Youngian, we just slightly change the set of Cartan elements while keeping all the relations. So in particular, when mu is dominant, those are actually subalgebras in Young. But when mu is arbitrary, the subquotients of Youngian tensors with some polynomial algebra. So that looks like not very interesting, but it actually gives rise to something interesting. So first, what about classical limit? So at the classical limit, they do quantize certain geometric objects, W mu. So they're introduced right here, but it will be for the next bullet. We also need that they also can be realized as a quotient because U and U minus are unipotent. So this map is isomorphism. And in particular, that allows to construct multiplication maps. So when mu one, and if I take a point here and a point here, I multiply, but it cannot, there is no guarantee that I'll end up here. So instead, I project according to pi from that set to that set. So it, well, the feature that it does is that it adds up those parameters. And so the theorem of Kincaid-Berg-Kamitzer from Rybnikov and Wicks from 5 years ago, 6 years ago, is that those Youngians do quantize W. Again, to say that they do quantize, we need to either consider h-bar version, or we need to consider certain filtration as they do and take associated gradient. And another very important construction on the paper is that those algebras are not Hopf algebras, but they come up with a bunch of coproduct homomorphisms, which add up the shifts. So for every mu one and mu two, you have a algebra homomorphism from the bigger shifted algebra to those two. And it's in the case when mu one and mu two are trivial, this is coproduct on the Youngian. And in general, it is co-associative, but only in certain domain. So for general mu one, mu two, mu three, those maps are not co-associative. And the conjecture they from their paper is that those maps quantize multiplication homomorphisms. And from the last discussion today, it will be kind of coming obviously that this is at least so for classical types. So in that statement, I kind of use both results already. So, and it's important, not only those algebras shifted Youngians, but also the certain quotients, which are kind of smaller size. So they're defined kind of implicitly as certain images under homomorphisms. And what's known that they do quantize interesting geometric objects, slices in affine Grassmannian, But originally, the first time shifted Jungians appeared was in the work of Brandon Klyeshev, who actually kind of linked two different associative algebras. On one side, you have Jungians. On the other side, you have finite W algebras, which are quantizations of Sladovy slices. And what they observed 15 years ago is that those truncated shifted Jungians, kind of coming from Jungian side, they do give rise to W algebras. And this result is compatible with this more general statement, because in type A, the slices are equal intersections of Sladovy slice and closure of an important part. Okay, and probably let me just show those horrible formulas for those homomorphisms. So once again, using those homomorphisms from shifted Jungian to algebra, so it is kind of localized oscillator algebra. So it has WU, whose commutator is S here, but we also allow denominators. And the truncated Jungian is an inch. Okay. So now in the last 5 minutes, let me explain what does it have to do with the previous stuff. So now the key point in that last part is that when the shift is anti-dominant, which is exactly opposite to Brandon Klyeshev work, for example, when the shift is anti-dominant, the shifted Jungians do have RTT relief. So first we need to recall how RTT and loop realization work in non-shifted setup in type A. So you take your N by T matrix, N by N matrix, you consider its Gauss decomposition, low triangular matrix, diagonal matrix, upper triangular matrix. And the result of Drinfield, which was carefully worked out by Brandon Klyeshev, that there is isomorphism from Jungian of GLN to RTT Jungian, which maps Drinfield currents just to the entries, first entries in upper triangular matrix, first entry in the lower triangular matrix, and diagonal. And you can kill out the center to get isomorphism of Jungian SLN and RTT Jungian. And the claim is that the same actually works when shift is anti-dominant. So mu is dominant, but that means that minus mu is anti-dominant. And RTT Jungian is defined again. A bunch of generators, the same relation in shifted star. So the moral is that in shifted story, we always keep relations. We just change number of generators. And we do require Gauss decomposition where E and F are as before in non-shifted case, but diagonal term starts from that asymptotic, G minus mu. So this is kind of a little bit awkward definition, and one can do it kind of in a better way using quantum determinants, quasi-determinants of Gelfand and Rieter. Not to impose this extra condition, just in terms of matrix T. But in any case, defining that algebra, we have the isomorphism of Drinfield shifted Jungian and RTT shifted Jungian. But important point to keep in mind, even though it's given by the same form, given by the same formulas here, and it looks the same, but the proof is very different. Because the proof in Brandon-Klyeshev does rely, so the key part is to show that this map is injective. It is easy to show it is homomorphism, surjective, but injectivity is argued using associated graded where it reduces to some PPW results. But for shifted stuff, our quantizations are quantizations not of universal enveloping, but of functions themselves. So the approach is very different. And what are the benefits? So first of all, the RTT approach is exactly designed to have very simple Hopf algebra structure. So we have coproduct, which is T goes to T tensor T. And in particular, when I restrict to SLN, it recovers those lengthy arguments, those formulas from Hinkelberg and collaborators' paper. Second, again, having T matrix allows to construct certain big commutative subalgebras called beta subalgebras in the standard procedure. And those commutative subalgebras actually descend to commutative subalgebras in quantized Coulomb branches. And they should give some interesting quantum integrable systems. And finally, there is a trigonometric version of that. And the RTT language allows to introduce immediately integral form. So something defined over Laurent polynomials rather than rational functions. And let me give just a few examples. So let me first, do I have 2 minutes then?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, so first of all, how is it related to the Lux matrix? So on one side, we had this GK law and later generalized in those papers for shifted Youngians, this homomorphism from shifted Youngian to localized oscillator algebra. Now we have this isomorphism from RTT to Drinfield shifted. So composing, I have homomorphism from here to A bar, to A theta. What does it mean? It means that given such homomorphism is the same as given n by n matrix whose entries are series in Z with coefficients in A tilde satisfying RTT relation. So in other words, we obtain Lux matrices. And they're going to be degenerate in the sense that they're going to have spectral parameter of various powers on that. But important feature is that they will be all coming as certain normalized limits of non-degenerate. And one of the crucial properties is that they're polynomial in spectral parameters. And just to give you an idea what this gives in the very simple case, when n is equal to 2, so we are having GL2 case, and the sum of lambda and mu is just the twice omega, twice covariate. So that way, we obtain three Lux matrices, three very well-known Lux matrices from 30 years ago. It is Lux matrix for the Toda chain, Lux matrix for DST chain, and Lux matrix for the Heisenberg. And basically, let me just conclude by saying that the same works in BCD types. So in BCD types, the only objective to carrying it out is just technical side, and somehow it took people more than a decade to establish identification of RTT and Drinfield realization, which was done only by Jean-Guillaume Molyev a few years ago. But now the statement is that the same works in the shifted setup. So you have isomorphism from extended shifted Youngian of G, where G is symplectic or orthogonal algebra, to RTT extended Youngian. And the corresponding Lux matrices recover those Lux matrices that were coming in Q operators in part three. So one, so kind of the takeaway from the last 20 minutes that we have separate discussion of shifted Youngians, and when shifted anti-dominant, they admit RTT realization. And that realization, those GK law type homomorphism, they give rise to a whole family of Lux matrices, some of which recover those nice constructions that appeared in physics literature in the last few years. Okay, that's it.
Right, thank you. Slava Ukraini.
Grem Slava.
So, go ahead, Kevin.
I didn't tell you.
Oh, sorry. Was that Sasha?
No, I was going to ask a question, but I haven't started it yet.
Okay. Well, someone ask a question, or I'm going to have to do it.
Can I ask a very stupid question? So I'm slightly, I mean, I got a little bit lost in the end, so I missed the following parts. So you had like three parts in your talk, and I missed what was the connection between part two and part three, if any.
So part two was about factorization into, so part two is probably when refers to T equal QQ, right?
Yes.
So the relation to the last part was that Q operator was coming again as a trace of monodromy. Monodromy is again just coming from taking tensor product of some Lux matrix. But in those Q operators, it's very old, coming from like 20 years ago work of Bozanov, Lukianov, I think, and someone else. In Zamolochkov probably. So those Lux matrices are degenerate. So they have spectral parameter. So the leading term is spectral parameter, but times not identity matrix, but some other element. And this does give rise kind of to the Youngian, but because of this asymptotics, for example, this algebra doesn't have finite dimensional algebra inside. So for classical Youngian, you always have G inside Youngian of G, but those shifted Youngian, they don't have G inside. So in particular, so part three was about those degenerate Lux matrices. And the last part was saying that you can obtain those Lux matrices by combining GK law homomorphism together with isomorphism of green field shifted and RTG shifted. Again, there is kind of mysterious part. Mysterious question is, what's so specific about GK-Loch homomorphism? Like it has explanation in terms of it's coming geometrically from Coulomb branches, it was natural, but I feel like it still needs to be better understood, like it's playing a crucial role, because why do we take on lead? There are many more constructions. Probably one more thing to be added, that because in one thing that I put under the rug is that in GK-Loch homomorphism, you have a lot of denominators. So it is, you have various differences of piece in denominator. While those large matrices that we use for trace, they're always polynomial. Otherwise, we don't know how to take the trace. And what the claim is that in those particular cases in B, C, D types, though there is a certain very non-trivial conjugation, change of variables, which kind of goes from localized oscillators to polynomial oscillators.
So, I have a question. So I'm going to repeat something Davide told me that so one way to think about these oscillators is that sometimes there are Coulomb branches which are vector spaces. Mm-hmm. This doesn't happen very often, but it happens when you have when you label your Dinkin diagram by minuscule co-base. I'm just repeating something Davide told me, so maybe I could be misremembering.
So you're suggesting that the case when those polynomials exist, those polynomial realizations exist, is exactly when the Coulomb branch is a vector.
Yes, and that, if you want to study a general Q operator or a two plane, there's a ton of different Coulomb branches, mm-hmm. but you just get some big nasty algebra.
Yes.
And it's only in like these small lists you get vector space.
Maybe. Yes.
So my question would be, would it not be more natural to just use the Coulomb branch realization instead of the GKLO picture?
You mean to construct large matrices with values are geometric objects?
This kind of tautologically a lattice matrix for the Shifley-Yangian value in the Coulomb branch, just because mm-hmm. of the known relation. And then sometimes the Coulomb branch gives you an oscillator algebra.
Mm-hmm. Very good point. Maybe. Yes, you can escape kind of at the end. One of the applications that you do something algebraic is then you look what it gives on the Coulomb branch. So you are saying that there is no need to go through this algebraic awful algebra and do it just intrinsically. But to link that back to something kind of known before, like those, it was just like, for me, it was funny that they were like, six papers, in one we construct that lattice matrix, in one we construct that one. And they're kind of unified in the same approach.
I see what you're saying.
Yeah. I mean, basically, like from today's talk, there are three ideas. Like one idea is that all those degenerate lattice matrices can be cooked out from shifted Yangians. Second, which again amounts to having RTT realization for anti-dominant one, only for anti-dominant. And anti-dominant is actually also important at the classical limit, because at the classical limit, if you recall what the multiplication was, we take of those slices, W mu, we take the product and then we project pi. But when the shifts are anti-dominant, you don't need to project, it's just the product. And that's how you prove that those coproducts quantize multiplications, because there is no projection, just multiplication. So that is idea one. Idea two, which is kind of, I think, is quite raw at the moment, because the big picture is missing, why those T matrices factorize exactly in two Q operators.
Well, that's easy, I think. Well, it's from a small picture, it's just you take.
In your last chapter, you explained this. Right? In the last chapter of your paper, yeah, you give some explanation.
That seems very natural for us. It seems much more natural than the one, to me, than the one where the product of n cubes is a t. Mm-hmm. Where you took q of some minuscule coweight and q of minus that minuscule coweight.
Mm-hmm.
It's a transfer matrix. That seems very natural to me. But okay, our picture is pretty physicsy, so I understand why algebraically it's kind of strange.
Mm-hmm. And point three is this BGG type relations. So those are kind of three main ideas from it.
There are other questions? And I have to admit, I'm kind of curious about these. So you said there are these, that you constructed commutative subalgebras of these Yangians using taking the trace.
Mm-hmm.
Can you give me any feeling for like how those relate to the like usual commutative subalgebra coming from?
No, there's like for example, in case 2x2 matrix, you can, and if you take some monodromy of it, you get Toda chain. So you can get various quantum Toda chains, but many more of them.
Are these algebras supposed to be two Q operators crossing each other?
Sorry?
I mean, these algebras, should I imagine two Q operators crossing each other kind of thing? All right.
I mean, as soon as you... There are many things you can do, like, probably I don't have expertise to answer kind of when the Q operators are close to each other, but to answer Ben's question.
No, there's this paper of Bajanov and Zamolodikov,
mm-hmm,
where they, you have the lattice matrix defining the Q operator, and mm-hmm, then you want to see that this commutes with itself.
Ah, yes.
So I then mean, there's some OR matrix making it commute with itself.
Yes, sure. So one, why do we, what's the important property of transfer matrices? So usually we start from some Hamiltonian, and we want to say that this Hamiltonian gives rise to the integrable system, which means that you need to provide a whole family of various Hamiltonians at the amount prescribed by dimension so that they pairwise commute or Poisson commute. So, and the way it comes up naturally is by taking traces of those transfer matrices. So traces of monodromies. So that was the idea of Fadeev school. So you mm-hmm take every RTT relation for the T matrix together with Young-Baxter relation for R matrix that guarantees that every such matrix satisfying RTT gives rise to big commutative subalgebra. So now on the input, you can take any algebra with values in anywhere, just satisfying RTT relation. So now, okay, if we take algebra n by n matrix for GLN or 2R by 2R matrix for SP2R or SO2R. So we take matrix with coefficients in some oscillators. And the trace will be taken over the Fock module. But even before taking the trace, you can just look at the entries that's been inside this associative mm-hmm algebra. And you can either take a single Lux matrix or you can take the product of several. So if you take this 2x2 matrix, just this one, and you multiply them several times. So you have a bunch of PQ variables. You multiply those 2x2 matrices. You end up with 2x2 matrix, depending now polynomial in Z of high degree, depending on N P parameters and N Q parameters. And it will be the Lux matrix. So if you compute the trace, it will give you the entire family of Toda Hamilton. So kind of you get a whole plethora of those.
But I bet there are these papers from like when people first wrote down the Lax matrix giving you the Q operator. They did this for SL2 in the late 80s.
Yes.
I think it was Bajanov and Zabolochkov. I think they studied this.
Yes. So what was the main kind of, as far as I understand, the whole paper by Winkelberg, Kamnitzer, Fromm, Wicks, and Rivnica was exactly to kind of, they saw that kind of multiplication. So we start from the idea that you start from a simple Lax matrix, you then take product of several copies, and that gives rise to the integrable system, is kind of linked very closely to coproduct on Young. So what they The final result in their paper is exactly that shifted Youngian of SA2 give rise to Todachev. But now what was presented in the last part is that basically, if you don't restrict to SA2, but to any SLN or SPN or SON, you can still repeat. But the question is just, can you identify it with sums? So you can identify it with like something physical paper, but to what extent explicitly can you make it?
Yes.
So there are papers like by Nekrasov Pestun on Coulomb branches before BFN stuff. So there they do introduce commutative elsewhere, for example, as far as I understand. So they treat it in language of spectral curve, but it is similar, I think.
But this story is certainly supposed to be related to Nekrasov's work.
What?
This story is certainly supposed to be related to Nekrasov's work on the appearance of the Youngian
on Q characters, yes. Yes. Listen. Yes.
To hog the discussion, I want to ask one more question. So something many people really want to understand here is, again, going back to these papers in the 80s, Bajanov and Zavalogikov, is the appearance of the Chiral-Potts model. Have you come across, you know what I mean?
No, I never read that.
So what they do, they find the L operator that whose trace gives you the Q of Q.
Mm-hmm.
And then you notice that Q commutes with Q.
Mm-hmm.
So then you think, okay, there must be some new novel OR matrix on the Fox space, transfer the Fox space, which some kind of Young-Baxter equation, which tells you that Q commutes with Q. Yeah. T commutes with T because of the OR matrix.
Mm-hmm.
Then you want to do the same thing for a Q commutes with Q. And they write this thing down and they find it's related to the Chiral-Potts model.
Ah, you mean that you take RTT, but R is now not the original R, but the non-degenerate one.
That's it. Or is not the original OR. It's not acting on two finite dimensional vector spaces. It's acting on two Fox spaces.
Yes, yes.
Like they invent such an OR. Anyway, this is a kind of a direction that I think nobody has fully understood since.
No, kind of
years ago.
Probably somehow related to what you're asking is kind of what I presented is very pedestrian. So it's a lot of technical computation. It all rests on the Gauss decomposition and knowing explicitly R metrics. So, and in your paper, you suggest that everything should work RTT realization of antidominant and factorization into Q operators. It should work in the general setup. But kind of the missing piece is R metrics. So there is the notion of Drinfield R metrics. So what we want to know is how is to evaluate this R matrix on the tensor product of finite dimensional and infinite dimensional. Or probably to answer your previous question, infinite dimensional and infinite dimensional. Mm-hmm. So if we know something about it, so that's kind of the next step, yes. We're trying to understand. So if you know something, if you have some way to kind of treat that R matrix, then you're well set. Because like it's, like there was the Zamolodchikov R matrix, but it was only like 4 years ago that Curtis Wendland, I guess, with Nicholas Gay and Vidas Rigalskis, they proved that actually taking R matrix, Drinfield R matrix, and evaluating on this simplest tensor product of first fundamentals gives Zamolodchikov. So you somehow need to have certain treatment, if not completely explicit, but some partial results about R matrix on such tensor products when you have, for example, infinite dimensional as one of the components.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I see what you mean. I believe there's a formula in these 80s papers for the case of SL2.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
All right. Is everyone satisfied? All right. Well, then, let's thank Sasha again.
Thank you.